happy to be here with all of you and looking around and seeing a few new faces. So hopefully when the service gets over, we should be able to greet you, and we'll take a few seconds to just shake hands at the time. I have chosen for a topic called Impacting the Nations. Now I noticed that in terms of New Hope Community Church, we have a vision which is called Transforming the City with the Renewed Hope. Now I noticed we are seated here. This evening we will be in the city impacting the children. I saw some pictures of shopping mall. Christmas time we are going to go to the shopping mall and so on and so forth. You go to the police station and impact the police. So you have a vision not only within these four walls, but you also have a vision to transform the city. I want to say vision of transform the city is very powerful, very great. May this vision of transforming the city become even bigger, transforming the nation. So you will have sometime later, you will have a vision to change in the other direction as well. Now I want to just start with the theological base. There's a difference between gospel of salvation and gospel of kingdom. Gospel of salvation is when each one of us is saved. So the good news for me personally, for my sins to be forgiven and for sure me saved passion. Gospel of salvation in individuals. But the gospel of kingdom goes out from us into the community. So it is going to transform the city, transform politics, transform the municipality, transform the police, transform the people, the values and everything. So God is asking us to embrace the gospel of the kingdom. The parable of seed and sower, you can also see that the seed is called the gospel, is called the kingdom seed. Then we go further, then it says Deuteronomy 28, if you fully obey the command of the Lord, then what will be the impact? The impact is not on me personally, but the impact will be on agriculture, 28 verse 8, financial, 28 verse 12, political, business, defense, family, travel, livestock, enjoyment, weather, leadership, domestic, spiritual, payment, honor, and education. Every area of your life. I would suggest if you want it, I will ask some of your pictures, but I will ask Virgil, give your email ID, ask them to send it to everybody so that they can have it. Here we are. Which means if you look at this previous slide, if the gospel of the kingdom comes, the transformation will take place in every area. It's not only our soul be saved and good, but the transformation will be everywhere. Agriculture, political, business, and everywhere. Then impact on the community in the New Testament. In the city of Ephesus, when the gospel was preached, you'll find that the sale of a particular goddess called Diana got affected. The sale of that idol, goddess of Diana, dropped drastically and economies were affected. Later on, people's heart was so convicted that they brought forth books of occult, books of magic art, and burnt it in the city. And the value of that, as per their currency, was 50,000 drachmas of silver. Millions of rupees in life as a common gospel. So the impact of the gospel is it affects the city, and such possible goddess of Diana type say go down, occult will be dramatically altered completely. Right? In the city of Philippi also you find that there was a lady who was having a spirit of divination, an evil spirit which was forecasting. That evil spirit kept on hindering Paul's ministry, so Paul rebuked that spirit, commanded to go out. So the spirit left the girl, but it meant that those who were exploiting her gift to gain some money, all that also went off. So there was a riot in the workplace, and Paul and Barnabas beaten up, put into Paul and Silas were beaten up and put into the prison. There was an earthquake, and eventually the jailer's family became followers of Jesus. So in other words, when God comes on the scenario, affects a community, then penetrates the neighborhood. It can affect prison houses, it can affect all kinds of false religions that take place. You have in the Bible, the so-called Temple of Solomon, as it's called, it had different sections. There was one section called Holy of Holies, where only the high priest went once a year. And there was a holy place, which is the priest and the high priest went there regularly. And there was an open courtyard where all the Jewish men went. And there was another section where all Jewish women went. And there was one section where the Gentiles were allowed to come. But in this Gentile court, people came and built businesses. All businesses they began. Selling of animals and money exchange and all that. The result was that if Gentiles want to come and pray, no place to pray because businesses. So Jesus came and drove out all the business and he said, my house shall be called a house of prayer. And so the preaching of the gospel began to affect every section of the society. Go further. Mary, the mother of Jesus, when she was told by the angel that she is going to give birth, and then she came forth. And then she said her famous statements, which is called the Mary's Magnificat. It's a song of praise that she said. She said, he has brought down rulers from their thrones and has lifted up the humble. In other words, the arrival of Jesus is causing some change in the so-called thrones. Those are being brought down and the humble people are going to be exalted. There is a right government coming into place. And he has filled the hungry with good things, but has sent the rich away empty. So there is an economic impact. The so-called rich, whatever currency they're using, that falls down to the poor people's things are well satisfied, the hungry. So notice the political inflammation and the effect on the people as well. Go further, you find the impact in the Old Testament. You find that in terms of agriculture in the time of Jacob, as he was in one place, there was a famine, he was going to move. God said, no, it's famine, but you still do the planting. He planted and he got such a huge bumper crop. All the neighboring nations got very much affected. They did their own divination to find out what is the reason for his fabulous bumper harvest. And they discovered it is us, God, that has made it. And he came and said, please make peace with us. We don't want to fight against you, but with God. So the favor of God upon any one of us during the time of struggle will be such, the neighbors will come and say, please make peace with us. We don't want to fight. So there is that agricultural blessing or financial blessing. But of course, the nation of Israel had many victories in the surrounding nations, whether it is the Philistine, Amalekites, Moabites, Ammonites, and so on and so forth. Many, many victories. Then you also have the laws and the kings all got impacted. You know, when Daniel was arrested because he still prayed to Jehovah three times a day, though there was a law passed that for the next 1 month, nobody should pray to any god, only pray to the king. And the king tried to change that, but the members of his court said, no, once the law of Medes and Persians is like that, once you make a law, it cannot be changed for the next 6 months. So Daniel was thrown in the prison, in the lion's den, but the lion's mouth was shut, he came out alive. And what did the king do? King scrapped that law. The law of Medes and Persians, which cannot be changed. He changed it. That is the power of the gospel, the power of the kingdom of God. It will change laws. There are many anti-conversion bills. They will change overnight, suddenly. Even though they may be written in hard stone, they will be changed because God is on the scene. When the kingdom of God comes, that is the impact on the nation of the kingdom. Now this, so far we have seen the theological base. We have seen Old Testament, New Testament impact. If you look in church history, you will find the Roman Empire was a very powerful empire, extremely powerful, spread out to the then known world and conquered it completely. But and then that time only Jesus came on the scene, had 12 disciples. 12 disciples were ordinary fisher folks and nobody, illiterate, ignorant men. They went and preached the gospel. Mr. Thomas came back to India and preached the gospel to all. And wherever they went, those people went, they turned the world upside down. Within 300 years, the Roman Empire bowed its knee and made Christianity the official religion. In other words, these bunch of small, ordinary people, they changed the world upside down. Think of Bible translation in the initial years, 1st century, 2nd century, 3rd century, and many centuries, almost for 1400 years, the Bible was available in Greek, in Hebrew, and Latin. But languages kept changing. People began to speak other languages. They began to speak German language, French language, English language, Anglo-Saxon language, which meant ordinary people could not read Greek, Hebrew, or Latin. I do not know how many of you can read Greek, Hebrew, or Latin. If you did not know Greek, Hebrew, or Latin, you could not read today's Zephaniah. All the Bible quotations of Revelation came, and so many Bible Psalms came. None of us would have been able to, because it has to be read only in Greek, Hebrew, and Latin. But people like William Tyndale and others, Wycliffe, they translated the Bible from those languages into the current languages of the people. So all the people read it. And because the people read it, they were able to follow it exactly as the Bible says. Otherwise, suppose I only knew Greek, Hebrew, and Latin. So you have to depend on me. And I can read, and I'll say, please give 10,000 rupees. You are at my mercy. Whatever I say, you have to believe me. Because you do not know Greek, Hebrew, and Latin. But then, this is the good part. When you read the Bible in your language, you can say, yeah, well, it's not given to you. No 10,000 rupees issue is there. So that is, the manipulation was what completely overcame. So, Bible translation affected the people. That affected everything, and including some industrial revolution took place. When the Bible got translated in the 14th century, you had William Shakespeare come in the 15th century, 16th century. He wrote his literature. Today it is considered the top class literature. And in William Shakespeare quotes a lot of the Bible translated by Wycliffe and Tyndale. In other words, the Bible affected literature. The Bible affected the social reforms that took place. The Bible affected the scientific research and industrial revolution took place. In other words, once you get the Bible into people's hands, they understand God, their life gets changes, intimacy comes with God, wisdom from God comes, and society begins to get changed. We must read the Bible in order to be able to make impact in our workplace, wherever we are working. Read the Bible and you'll find such wisdom you will apply it in your workplaces. Now, so far we have seen all the effect in Rome and England and whatever else. Now look, did any change come in India? Did any change come in India? Some of you may know this treacherous company, dangerous company, which came to India and looked at us and made us impoverished and really plundered us. They came with a view to make business and then became politically powerful, controlled whole of India. For 200 years they made us slaves and took all the money and all our gold and all our crowns and all jewels and Kohinoor time. Everything is gone there. Nothing is here. And now only we can get it back if you do a lot of running and win a trophy when they give you a small medal. That's all it come back. So little one medal at a time we have to get it back. Okay. So anyway, so that's what it is. So unfortunately that is a treacherous company called East India. And therefore we think of British Empire as a treacherous empire, blacklisted, don't want to do anything with British Empire because of this East India. This is true, and I'm not going to diminish one wee bit of what negative things they have. However, there is a difference between East India Company in Britain and missionaries that came from other countries, including the missionaries did a far different thing than what East India did. In fact, the missionaries were against East India, and they were the missionaries were responsible for our upbringing. And therefore, on one hand, we will blacklist this company, speak against British nation because they oppressed us, but we will speak well of certain missionaries. And I'm going to tell you some of the missionaries what they did. Alright? Now, we think missionaries came and started a church. Yes, but not just started the church. Missionaries came and impacted the society, impacted the nation. Let's look at some of them. There was one thing that happened was, in the year 1813, there was a man called Zachary Macaulay. He was a member of parliament in Britain. He was with a team of British parliamentarians. All of them were committed Christians. And East India Company's charter for renewal came to British Parliament. His whole team of Christian missionaries, members of Parliament, they said to the British Parliament, you will not renew the East India Company's charter until and unless they give a sizable amount of that profit back to India to look after their education, to start school, colleges, universities in India. A good chunk of the profit should not go to England, but should go back to India and pay for the education. So East India Company had no other choice but to agree with this thing. Only then their charter was renewed. Once they had set aside that huge sum of money for educational reforms, Zachary Macaulay went to the Scotland, the northern nation of Britain, and then he proposed to the Scottish Presbyterian Synod, the big headquarters, and said, look, we have managed to pass a bill, money is allotted, now we need people to go to India and start some schools and colleges. So Mr. John Wilson came to Bombay, and he started one school, Columbia School, then he started Wilson College, and then he started University of Mumbai. It was a Scottish missionary. Because of this group of Zachary Macaulay and William Wilberforce and other few who managed to get the money sanctioned, they took away the money from East India Company and put it back for the education. So we had, in 1857, University of Mumbai was started. Wilson College is still in existence for whatever, 150 years and more, all because of the work of this man called John Wilson. Another man called Reverend John Anderson, he went to Madras. In Madras, he started a school, then he started a college, and eventually started the University of Madras. Alright? So, another copy of John Wilson became John Anderson, and he started the university. Which year did that university get commissioned? 1857, same year as Bombay University. And there was another man called Alexander Duff, who went to Kolkata. Same history, started a school, went into college, eventually started the University of Kolkata. Which year it got launched? 1857. In other words, these people paid the price to launch our education institute. And outstanding institutes in the country are the ones run by formally established by this institution. To get a Bombay University degree was considered to be a prestigious degree because of these colleges that were started by these missionaries. East India Company looked at us, and this managed to get the money out and empower all of us. Those days, schools and colleges that were existing, very few were existing, they were only meant for the upper class, upper caste. These three people, they said, no, school should be open for all of us. A certain group of upper caste people boycotted the schools and colleges run by these missionaries. They boycotted, they continued doing the work. After 2 years, they found all of their so-called colleges, universities, were filthy. They slowly came back from the bank to get admission. Yeah. These guys stood their ground. They wanted to have uniformity and equipping for everybody else. So education is something that they discuss. William Carey was gifted by William Wilberforce. William Wilberforce was a member of parliament. He managed to collect money and send a printing press to Kolkata where William Carey was there. William Carey became a guy who translated the Bible into 28 languages, full Bible, and another 8 languages he had the New Testament translated. But it's one thing to translate, but how can other people learn? Now his colleagues, John Wilson, Alexander Duff, and John Anderson, they did the education, they educated the people. Now people are educated, they need literature. So they translated the Bible into all the languages. So now everybody could read the Bible in their local language. If you spoke Hindi, you had a Bible in Hindi. You spoke Marathi, you got a Bible. You had to translate the Bible in Hindi. Because printed by him, by printing it became easily available to all and sundry. Now we in India are known as, see in India we do have education system, ancient education system. It's called Gurukul system. You must have heard the word Gurukul. The problem with Gurukul is that very, very few Gurukul schools are there. Guru will be there. We'll take a few students and train them. Like you have Dronacharya. He takes only Kshatriyas and only teaches Kshatriyas the warfare. Nobody else can learn. And you have to enlist yourself. So you get the Pandavas and Kauravas, people like you then get trained. In other words, it is an exclusive school. Only a few elite people can. Everybody cannot. These guys, John Anderson, John Wilson, made the school available to everyone. The other thing was there were no literature. There was any literature, just like I said, Greek, Hebrew and Latin. Literature was in Sanskrit, that too in a script which nobody could read. Only one or two key people could read. So which means you are at the mercy of the guy who knew that Sanskrit of that script to be able to read. You have Sushruta, one of the very good skilled men who could the medical guy who introduced plastic surgery in India thousands of years ago, who also did sterilizing of all the equipment used in surgery. Thousands of years ago, very learned. But when he died, everything died. Why? Because there is no education system. There is no literature. There are no books. And if there are rich books and everything, people cannot read what he has written. Because that is written in a script, people don't speak. So his knowledge died with him. And after William Carey came and got the printing press, he got all the literature translated, printed. Everybody could get every literature, whatever he wanted to. And not only he translated the Bible, he translated many things. He translated the Ramayana, Mahabharata also into English. Otherwise, even the people who are from other faiths could not read their own language, their own so-called theological literature, because it was not available into their language. He translated it into the local languages and let the people read. So he equipped the people completely, and with the printing press made it easily available. So the most, even the sweeper's kid could become highly educated by learning these books. Otherwise impossible. Only if you are a Brahmin, only if you are a Kshatriya, only if you are this tribe, then particular guru school, that will be. It's very limited, handful, then the guru dies halfway, then students have no future. Now it is available everywhere, because the schools and colleges have started, universities have started, tons of colleges and schools have started by mysteries. So anybody and everybody can go into that place. The language, official language. You know that some history knows that Babur was one ruler we had. His son was Humayun. Babur ruled from Delhi and controlled a good part of India. Babur was successful, but his son Humayun was a failure. He had to run away. He was defeated. He ran away to Persia. But with the help of his Persian relatives, he was helped back to conquer back India, and he came to Delhi and ruled from Delhi. Out of his gratitude towards the Persians who helped him, he made Persian language as the courtroom language. All his darbar was conducted in Persian language in Delhi. Who knows Persian? Only knows only those in the members of court, the special elite, those could speak Persian. Nobody else could speak Persian. What about religious circles? Brahmin people would only learn Sanskrit. Only they knew Sanskrit, nobody knew Sanskrit. All other people, what languages they spoke? Somebody spoke Braj, somebody spoke Dakini. So all these local dialects people spoke. In other words, the ordinary people spoke some ordinary languages. In religious circles, Sanskrit, courtroom, darbar, only Persian, which means the ordinary people he had to go to the darbar. He was an alien. He did not have to depend on X, Y, Z. Please speak for me, please make me understand what they are saying. He was struggling. One guy, his name was Sam Kellogg, a missionary, who understood that these languages are not understood by the people, and these people also, because he speaks Braj, I speak Dakhani, you speak another language, then we can't communicate with each other. He went around all those people and found there are a lot of words common between all of them. He put all the words together and formed the language, and that language is called Hindi. In other words, who formed Hindi? A foreigner. A missionary, Sam Kellogg. He wrote the first dictionary. And he was the first grammar and first dictionary in Hindi. And everybody had some common words. So within no time, Hindi became widespread in the whole of North. And today, this official language of India, the northern half, is Hindi, given to us by a foreigner called Sam Kellogg. Now it became extremely famous by another man called Bharatendu Harishchandra, who wrote so many novels, magazines, books and everything, by which everybody began to read the Hindi, and Hindi became well known in the whole of North. Eventually, the Darbar in Delhi also changed to Hindi, and all the transactions, everything turned to Hindi. So Hindi now has become popular because the books of Bharatendu Harishchandra became available. But Harishchandra was not even born when Sam Kellogg made the first Hindi dictionary and Hindi grammar. And it was Sam Kellogg's book which helped Bharatendu. So if you go into some of the Indian circles, they will say, who gave us Hindi language? Bharatendu Harishchandra. rubbish. It was Sam Kellogg. 25 years before he was there, he gave us the real Hindi language. It's official language given to us by missionaries. So missionaries have blessed us with educational reforms, large number of colleges, books, printing press, all the literature made of it, official language as well. Social reforms. You know, those days, if a man died, there was no value for his widow. The only way to handle a widow, if that man came from a Hindu religion, he had to be burnt or he had to be buried. Some Hindus bury, some Hindus cremate. When he's being cremated, they ask the wife, the widow, you also jump on the fire. No wife is going to jump. Everybody loves their life, everybody wants to do it. Because they did not jump, the men would grab those ladies, take her to the fire where it's burning, the husband is burning, and they take bamboo poles and pin her down. She will be screaming because she's getting burnt alive. And there will be people beating big drums to drown her, shouting and yelling because she's crying out and drowning herself. They would also bury a man and bury his wife alive. And William Carey, the missionary who came to Calcutta, he saw, he was horrified. He went to rescue. They caught hold of him. You don't interfere with our religion. He was very upset. He had two magazines, one magazine and one newspaper, which was publishing. He wrote articles after articles. He documented 359 cases of either live burial or live burning of the widow, the sati as it is. And he published them so much so that finally the British government, who did not like to interfere with the religious customs of the day, finally said, this is not religious, this is outright murder, and murder should not be. So they passed the bill banning sati. All women seated here should thank Mr. William Carey for his relentless work for years together. It took him 27 years before that bill got passed. Thanks to him, otherwise many of you will immigrate. Not only that, there was a lady called Amy Carmichael in South India. There is a practice called Dev Dasi system. Dev Dasi system is if in any house there is somebody suffering from major illness, terminal illness, the family will say, if this person who is suffering in the house with terminal illness gets healed, we will ask our eldest girl to be devoted as a Dev Dasi to Goddess Yalama and in a temple we donate. Sounds good, she's a Dev Dasi. She's a Dasi of the Dev Goddess Yalama. What would really happen in real life is in the priest, in the temple are priests, and the priest will use these girls as sex slaves and use and misuse them sexually until they came of an age. Those girls, when they are no longer useful to the priest, they will sell them to the red light. So it was a backdoor entry for prostitution. Some of these girls ran away from those temples. And this lady, Amy Carmichael, was running an orphanage. She came running and said, please take us, they are misusing it, they are troubling us. So Amy Carmichael took those girls and children. People are very upset. Why are you giving shelter? We have given the Dev Dasi, giving us the. She said, no, this is not correct. Sending them to prostitution type in the name of religion is not correct. They tried to kill her, they tried to burn her, they tried to attack her when she was going in a bullock cart. Fortunately, that day she was took a different route instead of the route she was trying to go, so she got us inside. She relentlessly led a campaign. She also, like William Carey, kept writing notes. Eventually, the British government that was ruling them passed a bill banning this Dev Dasi system. And she was awarded a Kaiser Hind Award, the highest award that anybody could get in India from the British government for fantastic work. And thousands of girls were rescued by her. And so, thank God for young girls, if you are alive and if you are not being blown away to some Dev Dasi, you must thank Amy Carmichael. So they did that phenomenal. So social reforms were done. We already spoke about it. A lady called Dr. Nancy Mansell, she worked relentlessly. In those days, child marriage was very practiced, including our father of nation, Mahatma Gandhi, who got married at the age of 12. Those days, they used to marry early, but she fought relentlessly, and then she managed to raise the age initially to 12, and then later on to 15, and now it is 18 or 21. Those days, children of 5, 6 years were getting married. She managed to. There is another custom in South India where people from low caste were not allowed to wear, women were not allowed to cover their body, the upper part of the body. They used to walk bare. Only a loincloth covered the lower part of the body. And these lower caste women could be misused by any upper part. That was allowed. When the missionaries came, they were horrified to see women walking with bare body on the top. So they stitched for them some special clothes, gave it to the women, says, please cover your body. The upper caste people, women covered it, but low caste women were not allowed. And as missionaries worked, there was a knife that broke out. But the Maharaja Cochin, he felt that the missionaries was doing right, so he told the British government, these missionaries are doing well, please go and intervene. So then the British government intervened and then legalized officially that the people from low caste women can wear all that. As that was the local language, a thing called Chunar Muhala, which basically means covering their clothing. Women felt so good, people from low caste women felt so good that ultimately their community would be retained by the work done by the missionaries. In Jharkhand, there were four missionaries. Grosner is one of the names of Grosner, with four others. And they found that the local tribal people were producing some fantastic products from their nature in their custody. But business people will come, tradesmen will come from Calcutta, buy those things at a pittance. Locals would not earn anything. They'll go back to Calcutta and sell it at a phenomenal price. And Grosner and his colleagues saw these are being exploited and they are really benefiting. So they told the local people, you should not sell it for so much, you should sell it for a high price. They are getting a job. They said, we don't know how to trade. Can you help us? So the missionary stood in between the tradesmen and the locals and fixed the rate. You will only get what you can get for this rate. The tradesmen could not penetrate through the field. Finally, they had to give the price. They were still earning well, but the locals also earned well. The result was there was a huge economic prosperity of all those people in that particular tribe in the Jharkhand. It was so successful that people from other tribes from the neighboring states of India came to see what is the reason for them, what is it they're doing. They found out it was a missionary to help them to improve their stuff. And they, of course, Grosner and people also ran education system, schools, so the locals were getting money, the locals were getting education, and therefore it led to a huge prosperity of that area in every area, spiritual as well as educational and material. And that is why, even till today, some parts of Jharkhand, there is always resistance because the work done by the missionaries is offensive to some other people. And medical services, that's a very fantastic thing to see how the medical services have been affected. Let me tell you quickly stories. Before the missionaries came in the Indian system, there were only midwives who helped in the delivery and they deal with women. So, midwives are not trained. So midwives could do whatever their local training was there. So the result was there were a lot of child death, a lot of women's death during the time when the midwives had. The second thing was, if there was a doctor that the lady had to go, no lady is allowed to stay in anybody, any other house other than her room. So she went in the morning, she could only go as an OPD person, outpatient department, and by evening she has to go back. Some sicknesses you need to stay there for several days, not a lot. Because of which when they came back and eventually they died because it was terrible. Midwives were considered to be, call them nurses, but they were very, very substandard and it was ill-reputed in their work. Now, in such case, medical services started. Initially, male doctors came, but no women patients would come to the male doctors. Then the communication was made. Can female doctors come? When female doctors came, when female patients went to the female doctors, and female doctors ran some home, some hospitals, or clinics, the women came willing to stay, all care of the women, and as a result of which many, many lives were saved, many women's lives were saved, many children's lives were saved because of their life. There was one particular lady by name Elizabeth, and Dr. Elizabeth, her maiden name was Dr. Elizabeth PLB. In 1880, the Maharani of a place called Panna, somewhere near Lucknow, she felt seriously ill. Her local Ayurvedic doctors could not treat her, so she invited Dr. Elizabeth to come and treat her. Dr. Elizabeth treated her and she got healed immediately. She was very grateful and she wanted to give scope to Elizabeth to function more. Elizabeth said, I've been working here for many decades. I'm now old and retiring. I'm going back to India. Maharani of Panna was very upset. Maharani of Panna wrote a letter, folded it, put it in a locket, and put it a part of necklace, put it in a box, and gave it to Elizabeth and said, take this when you go to England, give it to the Queen. Say it is a gift from Maharani of Panna. There is a message in the locket. Read it. The Queen of England was given, she opened it, she opened that letter and read it. It said, there is a tremendous work done by your doctor, Elizabeth PLD, but she is retiring, she is going back. Will you please send more women doctors and nurses to India? And the Queen of England said, yes, we will support any women who want to go to India as doctors and nurses, let them go. That tons of women began to come to India, and as a result of that, India was flooded with women doctors and women nurses. By the way, in the some 2 decades ago, in the year 2010, India had the largest number of women doctors and nurses than compared to any nation in the world. Thanks be to God, these missionaries were responsible for it. The hospital services are the best hospitals in here. All the hospitals are standing on their own. At the time of independence, there were 1,000 hospitals run by the Protestant Christians and 1,000 hospitals run by the Catholic Christians. And they started those hospitals, which have become a lifeline. Those days, hospitals were not business houses like they are today. They were service-oriented. They saved the lives of people that were there. And because of this, nursing schools got started. Women from India got jobs as nurses, got training as nurses. They got employment. They got a future to do that. The nursing profession became very good. Today, nurse and their hospital service is so good that today 20,000 crore is what is got by India under medical tourism. People come to visit India but also get treated. And then do little sightseeing again, get treated, and then go back. So medical tourism is held all because of this doctor that are there. And though Christians are only 3% of the population, the Christian doctors are 12% of the population. And that's excellent. So, message in a locket over there. There is a stigma. Leopards were killed or burnt. Nobody wanted to interact with leopards. When people started leprosarium, that is a place to treat the leopards, and also started leper's colony, keeping them safe. Only missionaries started leprosarium. Not only starting first leprosarium, some doctors died due to leprosy, they contributed. First TB sanatorium was started by them. First psychiatric hospital and nursing care started in Lucknow by a missionary lady. First HIV AIDS sunset homes run by missionaries and Christians. Others were only showing charts of HIV. These were actually handling the HIV patients. Home for the blind, home for the aged, home for the beggars, home for the disabled, all started by missionaries. Home for orphans, widows, unwed mothers, started by missionaries. Anti-abortion clinic and shelter homes, adoption agencies. Now, so that's all the medical service. Now look at the agriculture reform. Sam Higginbottom, he was in Allahabad, and he found that every year there's famine affecting the, like even today, so many farmers are committing suicide. Those things happen. And he found that the techniques of agriculture are outdated. He tried to teach them, they didn't learn. He went to USA, got himself trained, came back and started an Allahabad agricultural college. And that invited the farmers, they didn't like it. So he took 600 acres of land and cultivated, and he got a bumper. He invited then the farmers. They were shocked, their lands were producing rubbish, but here was his farm was producing. So they sent their sons to go and learn, they taught them, they went back, and then there was a bumper crop for subsequent many years, and so their agricultural reforms came back. He also taught animal husbandry. Now Sam Higginbottom is no more, the late 1800s, early 1900s. His institute, Allahabad Agricultural University, government recognized it and gave it a name. It is SHUATS, it's Sam Higginbottom University of Agriculture and Technical Services. That is renamed after him before working. We won't speak about Dr. Norman Waller. He brought about the Green Revolution, and that gave us an Indian Civil Service. Lord colleague in the year of 1853, he said the East India Company consists of rogues, loafers, you know, who have come to loot. We need to reform the East India Company by giving them good bureaucrats, principled bureaucrats, bureaucrats who are filled with integrity. So they start the Indian Civil Service, Indian Administrative, IAS and ICS, IPS and IFS kind of thing. In that course, there were many subjects. One of the subjects was learning the Bible. When you teach the Bible in those institutes, integrity comes automatically as a bonus. So the initial bureaucrats were very principled, and that arrested the corruption that was there in the East India Company and the horrendous thing they were doing. And therefore, actual administration was done by the bureaucrats who obtained. This became so successful that in England, these missionaries who came here to India started it. They said, "Arey, we need such bureaucratic training in our country also." So in England, they started bureaucratic training, IS like services in England, after seeing the success of the ones in England. It was the missionaries who started this. Satyendra Tagore, the first Indian to clear the exam in 1864, he was the brother of Rabindranath Tagore, just for your information. Now, I have finished. We've got Diwali coming soon, let's finish it fast. Conclusion, there are three kinds of Christians I want to say. Number one is the pietist Christian. What is pietist? Christians who are born again, water baptized, attend church regularly, sing all the songs. We have one wife and two children, and only two. And they are regular, they are good, they are sweet, period. Alright? That's all the Christianity there. Then there is the evangelistic Christians, who will do all that the pietistic Christians do, but they will also share the good news to others. They will distribute literature, they will talk about their testimony, they will go through the foundation course, and they will be part of the church. They will be contributing money towards the church running, plus the extension of the church. They will be much more deeply involved in the church than just the simple faith people. Alright? But there is a third kind. I'm calling them Kingdom Christians. Kingdom Christians are people like William Carey, William Wilberforce, Amy Carmichael, who will go out of the four walls, out of their home, to the surrounding community and change them, impact them, improve their lifestyle, change the wrong laws, killing of wives, killings of widows, burning of the lepers, burying those wives alive, take the assistance, they will arrest it, they will give them education, they will inform, help them medically, they will improve them educationally, they will improve them financially, they will improve them in various ways so that the life of the people, they are transformed, but they reform the society. They will add value to them, they will improve their lot in life. They will make them upwardly mobile, and they will help them materially, health-wise, educationally, intellectually, which means they don't look after only themselves, they ensure that others are blessed. I recall we had one lady who was ministered in our prison ministry, and our maid had just left, so we informed our church people, anybody knows any maid who can come and work for us. They said one lady is in 5 years in the prison, she just come out, she'll be happy to work as a maid, but would you like somebody from the prison to come? I said, what was she in the prison for? Murder. We asked the people involved in the prison ministry, what do you say about her? No, she's life is transferred. Okay, send her away. So the maid came to our house, we employed her. The next murderer, 5 years in the prison, she worked in the house, and we travel a lot, so we used to keep the house keys and travel. She would tremble, thinking, "Arey Baba, they know I am who I am, and yet they have given me the house keys." She would guard the house zealously, because she knew this people would trust her. She remained with us 2 years in Bombay, and then after 2 years we went away to Bangalore, and we told them, "Sorry, we are going to Bangalore." He said, "Where will I go? If you're okay, I'll come with you to Bangalore." I said, "Come." So she put her bag along with our bag in the truck, and she came back. Bangalore, she served us for nearly 6 years. While she was with us, she said, I've got 3 children, they are in hospital, is there anything I can do for each other? So we managed to provide work, we managed to get 1 kid at a time to Bangalore, got them a place to stay, got them a house to work, also all the kids were working. One of the kids, the son, has finished his education, has now got a job. He got a 3 years apprenticeship in a German company. Now he's very gainfully employed. The girl that is there, she's married, she's got 2 children, she's settled down. And the guy is, the third guy is there now, he's taken up a job and he's there. So they're all together in the bank. And now she was working for us for 6 years. She said, now we stay with the job. Now, can we change whole of India? Can we change whole of India? Can we change a few people? Can we impact people? So with this lady change and her 3 children change, we can change people. And that is why we have, through the Sahara, so many prisons, homes that are established, ex-prisoners' home, homes for red light girls who have come out. We have homes for children of the red light girls. Otherwise, if they remain in the red light, they would have surely gone to prostitution. They have now got a hope and future. They have got a good education. They are improving life. They are orphans. There are boys, orphans, whose parents were HIV people. Their parents died, we looked after them. Today there are about 57 orphan children in our hostels. About 100 in all were cared for, others are all left and grown up, got married and are settled in jobs. Their life future is being affected soon, soon. And we have impacted lepers. Every Sunday lepers are being fed at the Bombay Baptist Church entrance there. And then there are Balwadis that we run. We improved education. A number of children, 12 Balwadis. In short, we can begin small, but we can make an impact little by little. Last story and I close. One boy was walking on the beach. And you know, when the high tide comes, along with the various fish, shells, everything gets washed on the shore. And when the low tide comes, water goes away, but some of these fishes get trapped in the little area. One of the fish is called starfish. And the starfish remains out on the beach as the sun comes up to all dry and dry. So, as this boy was walking, he was finding one starfish struggling for life. So he picked it up and threw it. It got bigger. And he walked ahead and he found one more fish. And there was an old man sitting there. He said, "Hey, son, what are you doing?" He said, "I saw this starfish stranded. It will die here. So I picked it up and..." The old man said, "Hey, you are a man. On this beach, there are millions of starfishes which are stranded. What difference will it make if you took a starfish and threw it inside?" At that point, the boy saw one starfish. He picked it up and threw it and said, "I don't know what millions, but it made a difference to that one." Whatever you do, 1%, I pray in heaven when you stand on the day of judgment, that 1% will say, "Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. I am here because of you." 1%. I could not affect millions, and I can affect 1, 2, 3. Are you the quietest discussion? Only me, my faith, and my family, me, my wife, and my 2 children? Only it hope, us, and no more? Or will you be evangelical, sharing out? Or will you be thinking, "I will make an impact. I will change the lives of a few people"? Maybe your lift man, maybe your milkman, maybe your security guard, maybe you are made somebody's life. Somebody's life to give them. You will sponsor the education of your maid children. What of that? I know a lady who had Hira's apartment in corporate. There was a lady selling bananas in the entrance. So she one day saw this lady who was selling bananas. She always bought from her. Next to her, the small kid was, "Who is this kid?" "My daughter. She's not going to school. And how can I send my children to school?" This lady from the higher apartment said, "No, what is the problem?" "No, I don't have money to send her to school." This lady said, "Okay, I will sponsor her money." Got her admitted, put her into school. She went to school, she graduated. And this lady is an air hostess person. She invested her, got her trained in the particular air hostess training. Today, the banana woman who sells bananas, that woman's daughter is an air hostess. I'm sure there will be people with testimonies like that. Can we make it? we are all well off. God has blessed us. Surely we can make an impact. 1, 2, 3. And if all of us do 1, 2, 3, 4, the city will be transformed, nation will be transformed. Amen? Let's bow our head. I'm going to just pause for a few seconds, maybe 30 seconds. If you wish, in your heart, quietly, you can make a fresh commitment to God and say, Lord, I don't want to just pray. I just don't want to eat, drink, and die. I need to make an impact. I want to impact my neighbor. I want to make an impact on those who I come in contact with and change their future, change their life. Why don't you make a new covenant and say, Lord, use it. Father, you heard the prayers of my friends here. Lord, I believe you are training a huge army, an army to look for the reformation of the city, transformation of the city, and who knows, transformation of the nation. Lord, there are people who are like the salt and light. They will bring taste in the people around them. They will allow the light of Jesus to shine in their lives. They will look for upliftment. They are not looking for a self-welfare. They look for the welfare of the presence of God. So I pray today, Lord, even as many have covenanted, put the seed in the hearts of all who are here. They will go out and make an impact in the world. They have received much, they will not give much because of the commitment. Pray, Lord God, remind us again and again by the Holy Spirit, this very thing.